Hey, Open Mic Podcast listeners. Want to share your opinions, give me feedback, or tell me what you're thinking? If you do, send me a voice message. Voice messages are an easy way for you to send me audio that might end up in future episodes of the podcast. They're the latest feature from Anchor, the platform that I use to make this show. Here are some things that I would love to hear from you. What questions do you have for me? What did you think of the episode? What did you think of the topic? Who should I interview next? Make up a theme song. I don't know. Do your best impression of me. I'll see all of your messages and I might add them into a future episode. Anchor makes that part super easy. You can send me a voice message right now from wherever you're at, wherever you're listening. Just tap the link in my show notes and I can't wait to hear from you. Again, thanks for listening to the Open Mic Podcast. Until next time, cheers and be well and enjoy today's episode.
It's time for the Open Mic Podcast with your host, Brett Allen. Broadcasting live from the Bay Area studios, here at the Open Mic, no topic is off limits. And of course, you never know who may stop by. So sit back, relax, and enjoy today's show.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome into episode 145 of the Open Mic Podcast. It's good to be here with you on this beautiful Bay Area Friday. Super excited about today's episode. Jim Meskimen is my guest, and he is an actor, and he is a voice actor. He's an impressionist. He is hilarious, and we had such a great conversation when we recorded this interview, and I've been waiting so many days to play it for you. It's the first opportunity I've had to get the episode out, but he was awesome, and you guys are going to love this. He is so cool, and I learned some super amazing things. He's been in the business for over 30-some years. It's crazy how long he's been doing this. And he is the voice of Ultron. He is the voice of Commissioner Gordon. So many things. I don't want to spoil it all. Let's get to the interview. Jim Meskimen, welcome into the Open Mic Podcast. It's good to have you here today.
Thank you, Matt. It's great to be here.
Well, I'm excited. I am a huge fan of yours, and I have been for a long time. And so I appreciate you taking the time to do this. So the first question I would love to start out with is you've been in the entertainment business forever, and you grew up in the entertainment business as well.
Right.
So for those who don't know, your mother is an actress, and we can mention her name if you want, or we don't have to. It's up to you, whatever you
prefer. Let's just call her Mrs. X.
Mrs.
No, let's call her by the name everybody knows, Mrs. C.
Yes. So Mrs. C, and you've been around that forever. Is that what informed you to sort of break into the business? Is that where your influences came from, or where, at what point in your life did you decide this is something that I want to do and I want to be a part of?
Well, it absolutely informed so much. I mean, my mom was a great mom. She was a single mom who raised my sister and I, who's also an entertainment professional. Ellen Kramer is a writer producer. And, you know, she made it go right to raise us on her own in a nice suburban, what was then a middle-class environment, and send us to college and all that stuff. And, you know, she did it by shooting for the stars. I mean, she really, in a very decent and hardworking way, she created a very strong, ironclad career. I don't think she ever had an idea of being an icon. I don't think anyone could ever think of such a thing. But she just wanted a very strong working life. And she has achieved that. You know, she really won. And she's now 90 and in her 91st year and not really needing to work now and not that ambitious about it. But I learned from her early on that a career is something that is nurtured and grown and not waited for. You know, it's not the phone, you know, phone calls do come in to change your life.
Sure.
But to wait around for that phone call is death.
I can't imagine. And I think she said this on another interview. She was interviewed by one of my friends, Kara Mayer Robinson. She just interviewed her at her house not too long ago. Yes. So Kara and I are very good friends, and I've interviewed Kara a couple times. And when she was talking about to your mother and then about you, I was like, oh, wow, this is kind of a simpatico connection. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. And she mentioned the fact that it's, you have to treat it like a business, right? They're not going to come find you. They're not going to come hunt you down. You, I'm assuming you've probably found this to be equally true, right?
Absolutely. And I'm just grateful that I had the, that viewpoint, you know, that I had exposure to that. Even knowing that, it's hard. But the fact that I knew that it was going to be up to me and my hustle, that changed things a lot, because I think a lot of people get into the business and they think, well, I had my, I took my headshots. Mm-hmm. I sent out postcards. You know, I go to these parties. I met a guy, he says he's a producer. Boy, that's, you're not even scratching the surface of what needs to be done. You know, there's, it's a full-time job. And even then you may not hit it, because it's an art, right? It's someone puts out their personality and their choices and their ideas about characters and their ideas about the delivery of a dialogue. And someone might go, yeah, and that's it. You know, your ship is on the rocks. So it's a game.
Does it just take one time for somebody to go, Matt, and then they could just be completely done with it? Because I've heard that Hollywood is addictive. It's almost like a drug, that so many people come there, thousands and thousands per year, to try and quote unquote make it.
Right.
And some of them are even professional extras. You know, that's all they do. Like, they'll hire two or three agents, which
it's a good living.
It's a great
living. Guys, you know, they do 300 movies a year.
You're like, that's insane.
Yeah.
That would probably kill somebody like yourself, who is highly elevated, who's, I would consider a celebrity of status, that, you know, that's a lot. I mean, it probably takes a lot for you just to do one show or one cartoon or whatever it is that you happen to be working on at the time. You couldn't have five or six projects going on at the same time, could you?
Well, yeah, that starts to be a bit of a strain, because schedules start to overlap and you're starting to get into trouble. You're starting to make people's lives difficult. So I used to stick as much as I could. Like, if I had a week where I was like, okay, I know I'm doing this commercial and I'm doing these voiceovers and I got this animation thing, but at night I could do an audiobook. And I did that for quite a while, but you run the risk of waking up the next morning and not being able to do the commercial because your voice is gone because of all the hard work you've done, invariably this is just the life, you know, and everybody experiences this. You go, okay, well, I'll put this and this and this, and now it's all full. My schedule's all full. Great. Perfect. And then another thing comes and you're like, oh crap. And another thing, you're like, no, not this week. Next week I have nothing. And suddenly you've, like, now you're in trouble because you have to please everybody. Like another client from before who you owe, you know, says,
by the way,
I need that recording this week. And you're like, I booked everything solid. So now I'm a little more trying to, actually just recently I realized from listening to Gary V, Gary Vaynerchuk, big shout out. I had a lot of respect for Gary Vaynerchuk.
Yes.
He's always talking about, I mean, he's a very, very sped up, very amped up guy. I mean, I have a lot of respect for him. I think Gary Vee is the best, but he also talks about deploying patience.
Yes.
And
that was a good impression, actually.
Thank you. I've listened to a lot of Gary Vee.
So speaking of creativity and that sort of thing, what is your creative process when you're going into a project? How do you approach that? And what do you do, say, you wake up and you're not feeling creative that day, or you have a block? Like, what is it that you do that you have learned to kind of help you work past all of that? If it's a loaded question.
It's a great question. I mean, I assume you mean is there any particular area, like,
well,
TV,
just whether it's like voiceover, animation, just anything that you have to come up. Let's say you have to come up with a voice for Transformers. They've come up with a new robot. They come to you. You've done this, that, and the other. Like, how does that process work for you?
You know, I'm very fast. So, and I'm also very ready to create at all times, because that's all I do. Mm-hmm. So but that being said, there are tricks and things, because there are times when you're less creative and less willing to make something or to come up with an idea. Right. So I find that anything you could, like creativity to me is like a flow. It's like a flow out of a faucet or a hose. And like a garden hose gets kinked, you know, it gets bent and it hisses and nothing comes out. And creativity is sometimes that way too. I don't know how it gets wound up inside us, but it does somehow. And I find if you can just get a little bit of a flow going, like if you're not feeling creative, you could sit down and try to write a little bit of a poem, just two lines. Or you can try to draw a little picture. That's enough to get some drops of creativity going. A little bit of a current is now running through the wire. And you can build on that. And it's funny how, because a flow will run one way and then it'll run the other way, mm-hmm. right? A hose, again, use that simile. The water comes out of a hose in one direction, but it could go the other direction. Now, in life, our creativity is usually being stopped. Our creativity is not really wanted. Mm-hmm. You know, let's just stick to the rules. This is how we like it. It's not your turn. All these things add up to a big stop of your creative flow. And we get used to it because we have to get along. Mm-hmm. You know, like you're listening to me now when I'm talking. I listen to you when we're talking. We have this back and forth. But out there in the culture, in the world at large, mostly they want to talk to us. They want to say, you're going to buy this now. You're going to stand here. You're going to come arrive here. You're going to do this. You're going to get this disease. And, you know, it's just all day long, you know, and you're like, okay, well, I want to be part of this. You know, I'm trying to make it here, so whatever you say. And you, after a while, you realize, I haven't contributed anything in a really long time to this conversation. So you've got to get yourself off. What I do is, and I live a very, not a solitary life, but I spend a good deal of time alone, mm-hmm. Just by the nature of our business. And I create things all the time. If I have an idea and I'm like, that'd be a nice little story, I'll just kind of write notes down or I'll dictate it into a machine. I don't stop myself from creating. And whenever I can, I foster creativity, which is just the invention of something. Creativity is not some fancy thing. It's just like, oh, what'll I wear today? This character that I'm going to play, like I just got a part in a little independent film, and I'm like thinking about, I wonder, maybe I should grow out a little facial hair and see if my earring hole is still... if I can get that open again from 1978. So I recommend to people that they, you know, whether it's picking up a ukulele and strumming it or whatever, just try to get into the zone of, now I'm going to make something. Maybe mm-hmm. it's going to be crap. Who cares?
Sure,
I'm going to make something. And that's what I do. I mean, I do that all day long. I get a script sent to me by my agents or friends or whatever, and they say, hey, can you do this? Often it's a celebrity because I do a lot of impressions. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a Morgan Freeman voice for something or other, and they just want that full-on Morgan. Or, but like you said, sometimes it's, the Transformers, and now has this hillbilly thing. And you're like, oh, okay. And you have to kind of go, well, what was that? So I'll research. I'll go on YouTube. I'll listen. I'm a good mimic, so I like to hear things and then copy them. But the more I know this from, sometimes I treat it as a job and it doesn't work very well. Sometimes I treat it as a game, works much better.
Do you have a preference over one versus the other, voices versus film and television commercials, or is it all the same to you?
I don't. I mean, and obviously, you can make money faster as a voiceover person, which is one of the main reasons I focused on it in my youth. But now that's not such an issue anymore. I'm actually very interested in being on camera physically and creating with the whole instrument.
It's fantastic. So at what point in your life did you, because growing up in that world, I'm sure you had all kinds of influences, but at what point did you decide this is something that I could actually do and be successful at as an individual?
You know, I was young and I'd made a decision about what art form I wanted to pursue. I'd studied as a painter mm-hmm. and I was living in Spain, and I had an epiphany in Spain that, wow, you know, what really excites me is this performing. And that's a long story. But when I got to New York, I just had the feeling and you know, the confidence of youth and knowing myself pretty well too, that I could fit in. And I remember being on this in New York City and walking around with other people after auditions. It used to be, and I don't know if it's that way anymore, it probably isn't, that the voiceover guys would see each other like about every hour, 45 minutes at some place in New York.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, I think it still might be. I interviewed a couple people recently, and they were saying that it's almost like ships passing in the night, you know, where they just see each other. Oh, you were there for that commercial or that, you know, cartoon. Oh, I'm headed that way now. And there's 20 people up against you for one particular role. I not to digress in the conversation, but I
no, but you're that supports what I'm. Yeah, that, I'm sure it's going on to some degree, and so I used to hear as a beginner, I used to hear the same kind of, as I wasn't hanging out with the professionals at that point. I was hanging out with the wannabes, because that's where I was, and they would all say the same thing, like, oh, the same six guys do everything. And there's no way in, you know, and all this kind of gloom and doom talk, which was just their way of getting me to back off.
To quit, essentially.
To quit. So I heard it enough times to realize, wow, you know, everybody says this. I don't think it's true. Mm-hmm. I think the mere fact that everybody's saying it invalidates it. So I made a point to always, whenever I heard that, and I heard it continually, in my mind, I would just disagree. And I think you have to... you have to disagree with things that say, nah, yeah, you're not gonna, not you. Mm-hmm. You know, because if you look at some of the biggest celebrities we have, or the people with the healthiest careers, they're the most unusual, weird sounding, looking people that nobody even bothered to try to discourage.
Right.
You know, I mean, we're all so used to him now, but Arnold Schwarzenegger, just before he came to prominence, if you said, well, this is going to be the most bankable star of the 80s, nobody would even bet you. No one would even put any money down. It's like, why are we even talking about this?
I have to agree with you on that it's so interesting, because I think the world that you live in and that you are active in is so different than something that I'm used to. Now, I have an advantage because I'm a podcaster, and so I have the privilege of being let in by people like yourself or Susan Bennett or any of these other people who allow me to come in for 30 to 40 minutes. And so it's kind of nerve-wracking for me a little bit, because I want to be as prepared as I can, because it's a one-shot thing. And I find it, what you say, to be so true, in the sense that you look at Arnold or some of these other people and you're like, well, how the heck did that person get picked? Or why did that person get picked? It's because they're so unique and so different than from anybody else, but
right.
they never gave it up. Do you
right.
think that the world of film and television and acting, do you think that's something that anybody can do, as far as even if they have a little bit of talent? Or do you think that it takes a very special person to be able to pursue that entire lifestyle that you're a part of?
Well, I think anyone who wants to deeply should try it. I think, yeah, I do think anybody can do it, because I think anyone has a valuable viewpoint. These days, and entertainment has changed so much, and it's going to continue to change. And it's just like we're like all in a big room telling stories. Mm-hmm. So does everybody have a chance? Everybody should have a chance. And some stories we're going to go, man, that was a great story. God, I love the way she told that story. Others are going to be like, yeah, I heard it. That was, yeah, okay. And maybe some of us will go, wow, that was a terrible way to tell that story. But everybody should have a chance. And these days you might find your audience of people, you know, even the people that using that big room analogy, you know, people go, wow, that was, most people, 85% of the people in the room go, phew, never let that guy have the microphone again. 15% will go, that's my guy. Mm-hmm. He's telling it like it is. You go, all right. Because we're now able to reach people all over the world. And we're going to inevitably find people that kind of get where we're coming from a little better than others. And it's a wonderful thing. It's also a little bit of a tyranny because we're all talking at once. Mm-hmm. So one of the great things about art forms is they begin to crystallize and studios form and channels become very grooved and, you know, Netflix happens and, you know, these things where you go, well, you know what, I could search all over the internet for my entertainment. I think I'll go to Amazon Prime. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, all right, you know, that's going to sift out, I don't know, 4 billion entertainers. I don't know. Like, so I think, but it's acting is not an entertaining, like I say, I mean, you hear people say, well, it's storytelling. It is. It's expressing some part of yourself. Mm-hmm. And people do it in a million different ways. They do it physically only. They do it vocally only. They do a mixture of the two. They do, you know, animation. There's so many ways, and we're discovering new ways to do it. And it's a marvelous thing. We're all kind of saying, hey, I'm alive. Here's what I dig. Here's what I'm scared of, or here's what moves me. And it's great that we can. I mean, I love it being a YouTuber. I've got a YouTube channel, and mm-hmm. I get people that write into me from Scandinavia, from Tokyo, and Germany, and whatever. And I can, and they get to see my little show. And they say, hey, I really like so much what you're doing with the impressions. It was fantastic. And I live in Oslo, and I wish I could do so much things like you. Or, you know, whatever they write. And I get guys that say, you suck. And I try to turn them around, you know, just by being polite. And I can almost always do that. So it's a wonderful, wonderful time.
How do you choose, speaking of the people that are out there, because I feel like, as what you do is an art and you're putting your art out there for the world to see, maybe not necessarily like a television show. Well, you know, you have your TV show Impress Me.
Yes. On Amazon Prime.
Yes. Which I've watched all of those, before
Thank
I talked
you.
To you. Yeah, of course. And so I got to do the research, but yeah. Like, how do you handle the criticism that comes in? You say that you try and turn them around. How do you choose what to respond to or just ignore as a troll, as they call it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, if it's just a hateful remark that's gross, I don't ignore. I trash it. If someone just says, oh, he's not very good, and I get that quite often, I will just try to acknowledge what they say, because I've had the experience of people within a few interchanges of them realizing, oh, there's a live guy who put this up. Mm-hmm. And I've just been kind of rude to him. They have that realization. Sometimes they turn around and they go, I'm sorry, obviously you work very hard. You know what, I'll give another one of your videos a try. And I've developed some fans from that. So people are basically good, I believe. And but we're all kind of used to dealing with robots and automatic things and personless things. And I think we're kind of harsh on one another, not realizing, hey, there's a man back there.
Yeah, yeah. It's the same way with podcasting, because sometimes I'll have people just email me some things that I'm just like, wow. But it still doesn't stop me from creating and trying to put out content.
Yeah.
Because if I allowed that to stop me, I wouldn't be doing
yeah.
this.
Yeah.
And so you have to make that decision. I think it's obviously not at the same magnitude of what you're doing. I mean, I can't do a George Bush impression. I can't do that, but I find it mesmerizing. But it's funny that people kind of feel like they have the right to just attack that, because they're not doing that, probably.
I'll tell you what, that mesmerization, that's always been tough for me. When I was in school, I couldn't mesmerize anything that they gave me to like a poem or anything. So I feel you.
That's hilarious. People, if you're listening, I can see Jim. It's just, that was like, he was sitting here in the room. I kind of teed that up on purpose. But I wanted to ask you in that same vein. So you choose to create and you choose to maybe not you know, acknowledge those particular comments, but you just continue to put the work out, right? Regardless.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I get very few of those evil comments. I mean, what I would consider just that's ill intended. You know, you're trying to do something, you know, make me ruin my day. Well, like, okay, fine. I don't want to have anything to do with you. You do that to everybody. And I was going to say, I remember when I had my first viral hit, the Shakespeare and Celebrity Voices.
Yes.
The first bunch of comments that came in to what would eventually be, you know, millions of views and lots of comments. The first ones that came in were quite cruel. And I had an awful feeling of, oh, no, what have I exposed myself to? And they were... because of my religion, these people felt like they had to shut me down, not because of my talent or because of how cool the video was, which most people then started to agree that was pretty cool.
It is. Yes.
But because of this very personal side of me, they were like, ah, 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 and I was like, oh my God, what am I in for? And I didn't respond to them. And I was very relieved when the rest of the world opened up and said, wow, you know, and hey, and cool. And that video went on to change my life. So I guess I learned early on that you just ignore those guys. They're a minority, a very small minority. The really crappy ones, the really bad ones, very small minority. And then there's just the kind of cranky ones. And those I can work with. And I don't get such a huge volume of comments that I can't answer them all. I can do 15, 20 comments a day. That's no problem. And it's fun for me. And I've made a lot of friends, wonderful people that write in every day or to my daily videos. I have a daily fortune cookie that I read as a celebrity, and people write in every day saying, I like this one. That was great. Or, wow, I didn't think you'd be able to pull that off. And you know, it's a nice conversation. I've never met any of these people. Maybe I never will. But it's lovely that we can communicate that way.
It kind of blows my mind that I guess I haven't experienced that sort of level, and I don't know that I will. That people just feel like a right to just come in and attack you or your family, or even you mentioned religion a little bit.
Yeah.
It's just so interesting. Yeah. But
the losers. Losers. You what they are, Matt, they're losers. They're complete losers. We don't pay attention. We don't. You can't pay attention to them.
Well, because you live your life in the limelight, so to speak, and everybody knows who you are and what you do. So you just, but I appreciate the fact personally from one person to another that you don't allow that to stop you creating, because it brings joy to millions and millions of people, you know, when you do your voices or you're on a TV show like Anchor Management. We talked off tape a little bit about that, or Parks and Recreation. I mean, the list just goes on and on. So how do you choose projects as an actor? What do you decide this is something that I want to do, or I don't feel that this is right for me to do as who I am as an actor or as a person or what my skill set is?
Yeah. Well, right now I try to always say yes. I mean, particularly if someone's offering me a part, I try to figure out a way to say yes. But entertainment is changing a lot, and there's a lot of stuff that I kind of am a bit squeamish about. And I always look at, like, in the same way that I approach my own work that I do, that I originate, I look at what is the effect on the audience that we're trying to create. Mm-hmm. And these days, there's a lot of entertainment that I'm not sure what effect they're trying to create on this. Mm-hmm. But it's a little, sometimes it can be very depressing. Now, I'm going to say something that I'm sure a lot of people will not appreciate, but my wife and I, at night, we watch TV at night before we go to bed.
Okay.
So we went through the whole Friends 10 years, and that was great. And that was a perfect way to kind of wind down the day. And then lately we've been trying to find other shows. So we've been auditioning a lot of other series and watching them at night. And some of them are just not good for bedtime. Like we watched Ozark.
Oh, that's not a good bedtime show.
A bad bedtime show. I respect Jason Bateman a lot. I worked with him before. And wow, he did a great job. I'm not going to watch that show unless it's daytime again.
It's a very dark show.
The dark show. So in that same way, and what effect are they trying to create? I think I know the kind of effect they're trying to create at an audience. And it's not the effect I want to have given to me before I go to bed. Okay, fine. But like Breaking Bad, also not a good bedtime show. It's a good wake up at 3 a.m. and watch it and freak out.
Great show.
I did
show.
That a few times. Great show. And I think Ozark is kind of the same, a little going for the same sort of flavor.
Yeah,
but,
I think so.
But so when I look at a project comes in, I go, well, what, you know, how does this make me feel? How is this going to make other people feel? Would I like my daughter to see this? You know, how do people that know me, how would they respond? And, you know, it very rarely happens that I go, you know what, this isn't for me. But occasionally it does. Yeah, there have been little things, I'm thinking of them in my mind, things that came up that I won't mention that I kind of went, yeah, you know, I'm just not on that wavelength. I know about myself to know that it's like, that's kind of sleazy, or it's kind of yucky, or it's kind of violent and ghastly, or... I like things to have a sense of humor. Mm-hmm. I like things to have, I mean, I like drama too, but I like it to be truthful. And I think when you see entertainment that's truthful and doesn't insult you or say, you know, humanity's bad and here's another aspect of that. Wow. I mean, I don't want to spread that around. I want people to be, like in my live shows, I like them to be uplifted. Mm-hmm. If I do a live show and everybody's talking afterwards, I feel like, okay.
You've done your job.
I did it. They feel better. They're talking to one another. They're talking to strangers. This is cool.
Do you enjoy, I know recently you were at one of the cons. Is that what's next for you right now? You're making your rounds to all of the Comic Cons and the Wonder Cons.
No, not really. I'm not in that, that loop particularly. And, you know, it's very rare. I get invited. Both times I've gone to the Comic Cons, I've been to the San Diego one and this one, the Wonder Con, and, Mark Evanier, who's a writer and I guess a big fan of these things. He has invited me to speak on panels. I may go to a thing called Supernova, which is down in Sydney, to promote my friend Scotty Brewer's project, Garrison 7, which is a great science fiction epic that's coming down the pipe. So I may go down there. But I don't star in a lot of animated things. I'm a working actor. I'm a character actor. I play Ultron. I play Uli in Puss in Boots. You know, I was on various little shows, but not as the lead. I haven't been the lead in a ton of series. Like, I'm not like Rob Paulsen or these guys who I love and respect, or Fred Tatasciore or Eric Bauza. Love these guys. Love them to death. And but they've got a great career, and they are valuable voices. I mean, I've cast for voice projects before, audiobooks and other things. And if I could get Fred Tatasciore, I was always happy, because I know he would do it. He's a splendid, splendid artist. Same for Rob and Eric and Jeff Bennett and all these geniuses.
Yeah, those are all great guys that you mentioned. If you know anything about the voice world, all of those guys, Kevin Conroy, I mean, they're just all like unbelievably talented. And I would say the same for you as well. So do you have any dream projects or anything that you
want to work on and places you want to go? Well, I love Better Call Saul after that big rant about Breaking Bad. I love Better Call Saul. I've been trying to get on that show. And I had a couple of chances, didn't get chosen, but it's something I'd love to do before they end off. I'm also writing a screenplay, because I realize, you know, it always goes well if you can write something and cast yourself in it. So I'm writing a screenplay now. I've been working on it for a while, and it's getting some good response about an impressionist. It's a little bit of a thriller, a little bit of a different view of what it means to be an impressionist. And that's for a feature film. And beyond that, I'm going to continue to do live performing and come up with new stuff. I'm going to do a live show in Los Angeles at the Acting Center on May 11th, Saturday, May 11th. And I hope to have a guest star, a very gifted impressionist, a female who I've worked with, not yet. And I like her a lot, though. She's terrific. I won't mention her name because she hasn't told me for sure she's going to
totally
do it. But I love to have guests. I've had Fred Tatasciore and Piotr Michael and Ross Marquand on my show before, and it's super fun to collaborate. Angela Hoover as well.
One last question. You obviously are out and about a lot. Is it a pure joy for you to meet fans when they talk to you and they go, oh, you were Ultron in Avengers, or you were Commissioner Gordon on Batman? And then they obviously probably call on you to, hey, can you do this or do that? Does
yeah.
that become tiring for you? I don't want
not
to put
all.
You in a corner or anything like that. But I've always wanted to ask that, if that's something that
It's so great. I don't experience it very often because I don't go to these cons, right? But I've been to two, you know. So, but I realized at this last one at WonderCon, I realized that we had a room full of, there had to be 1,000 people in this room for this panel. And they were just delighted by what we were doing. He had us reading a script of Rapunzel in different voices, and I did. Tommy Lee Jones was the narrator a little bit, so he took over, and George W. Bush, as you mentioned before. And the fans just laughed and loved it, and I realized the cons are like, that's the way for the fans to flow back there and to actually participate in the art form, and not just receive it, but be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love completing that part of the cycle, you know. It shouldn't just be us talking and making funny sounds and everybody laughing. It should be we interact and we get to know each other.
I want to say thank you for taking time to meet with me today. I really appreciate it. And if people want to learn more about you or just kind of find more about you, how can they do that in particular?
Well, I'd love for them to subscribe to my YouTube channel. You just look up Jim Meskimen or Jim Pressions. Meskimen is M-E-S-K-I-M-E-N. I'm on Instagram at Jim Pressions, and jimmeskimen.com has a lot of information about me too.
Well, Jim, thank you for joining me here today. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for such a fun conversation. I've enjoyed it very much.
All right. I hope everybody has a fantastic weekend. Thanks for being a part of today's show. Be sure to listen to us exclusively on radio.com, iHeartRadio, and all the other amazing podcast formats. Until next time, be blessed.
That brings today's episode to a close. Thanks for listening in. If you enjoyed today's episode, head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a kind rating and review. It really does help. Until next time, cheers and be well.
Hey, everybody, it's Brett Allen from the Open Mic Podcast, and I just wanted to say thank you for listening and joining in to today's episode. It means the absolute world that you want to listen and be a part. In the spirit of sharing, there are other shows that I recommend. Some great friends of mine that have some amazing, amazing podcasts. Eric Conley from Unstructured, Kara Maya Robinson from the really famous podcast, Growth Mindset University with Jordan Paris, and last but not least, Jones.show with Randy Jones. Thanks for listening and have a great day.